and welcome to Happy Place. I'm Fern Cotton, and this is the show that meets people who have lived a life and are still making sense of it all. And today we're adding to our little box set of Olympic gold-winning athletes as we meet Jessica Ennis-Hill.
It was the toughest time of my life because I just wanted to spend all my time with my little baby and do everything right for him. But then I wanted him to see mummy working and going for medals. Yeah, it's the hardest thing.
Jessica has done some amazing things. The ones you'll have seen are mostly on track and field, but coming up from having a baby and doing it all again. How did she do it? We'll find out.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
And now, here's the show. Jessica Ennis-Hill, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I love saying dame.
It's so strange.
Is it strange?
Yeah. People always say, you know, does everyone call you dame? And not really. It's just, it feels weird. I feel, yeah,
well,
strange.
Well, unbelievably deserved. So you should fling it around like no one's business.
Oh.
It's amazing. I've been a long time fascinated with you because of what you've achieved and how you've done it. And being an athlete and being a world-class athlete in the heptathlon, you're not going to be just world-class at one thing, but seven, which is just, you know, as someone that likes running and doing exercise, I can't fathom how you would be so acutely brilliant at so many things. Have you always been able to sort of focus on many different things in life and spread yourself that thinly?
I think it's something that I've learned over time. So when I first started athletics, I kind of, you know, started off in the sprints. It was something I enjoyed. And then I at a very early age, fell into the heptathlon. And at the beginning, I absolutely hated it. I was
really?
Like,
what?
Yeah, I hated it. I kind of went into it very naively. And my coach was like, yeah, there's this event, the heptathlon. You just do a few events on this day, a few events on that day. It ends with 800. It's fine. And it actually is a really brutal event, and it's so hard. So before I knew it, I was in this event and not winning that much, not very successful across all of the events, and just finding it really tough. So yeah, it took quite a bit of time to like understand all the events, master them all in a reasonable way, and just start to enjoy and love the event. So
what made you stick at it? Because I would imagine, sort of thinking about how I would deal with that situation as a young person, if I wasn't winning, I'd think, oh, sod that, I'm not doing it anymore. What made you persevere and think, actually, this is worth putting in a bit of blood, sweat and tears to try and do well?
Yeah, I think you're right. When you're a young child, you kind of want everything instantly. And I did very much. I wanted to be successful straight away. I wanted to be on the podium. And I was nowhere near getting on the podium. So it was hard. And I had to learn to approach it in a different way. So know that it was a short-term like success. It was going to be a longer journey, and it was hopefully going to be long-term success. And that was something that my coach instilled within me from a young age. He would just say, right, okay, we've got this plan. You're not going to win medals maybe for like 5 years, if not longer. And I was like, wow, this is ages. You know, injuries happen and there's all these other things that take place. So yeah, I suppose I just had to trust in his plan and understand that it would be a process. It would be a longer process.
And 5 years for a kid is like, you might as well say in 200 years, you know, it's just, it's a stupid amount of time for a kid. So I think that's remarkable that you thought, actually, I'm going to listen to this guy and I'm going to stick with it. And I think it's really interesting what you just said about how as a kid, but also I think in today's culture we all want results really quickly, and because we get a lot of stuff quickly, like there's 5G now, so you can get even more speed on your phone or whatever. Everything's so quick, and you can order something and it's with you that evening, that actually there's something to really be said looking at your whole life rather than just like a shopping delivery, that wait is so valuable and worth it. What have you sort of learned from that huge amount of patience you've had to sort of learn to live with for your career?
I think it's about appreciating the journey. That's what I've learned the most about, is you do, you know, for many years I was a very impatient athlete and wanted things straight away, and I had to learn that it is going to take time, and trusting in a process and understanding that the journey that it takes to get to that point makes that end point what it is, and so much sweeter. So it's just understanding that you are going to have these ups and downs, and things aren't going to go to plan, and you almost don't want to be at your best straight away. You want to have this journey to get there, because when you are there, it is seriously incredible, and you look back at what you had to do to achieve that.
Yeah, I just think that's what we all need to take heed of, is that sort of advice, and also not to rush that journey and that experience, I guess, and enjoy it as you go. And you know, I'm sure there have been some excruciatingly tough parts to that, like getting injured. How have you dealt with that over the years, having that, I guess, sort of inescapable dormancy from something that you love, and I guess something that feels like a huge, I was about to say hurdle, but that's the wrong word to use. It's a really appropriate word, but then it's confusing because we're not talking. But I mean, you know, sort of like something, a dead end, like blocking you from that goal of what you want to get. How do you deal with that?
I think up until the point when I suffered a really bad injury in 2008, and that affected that whole year. You know, I was due to go to my first Olympics in Beijing and was all ready for that. And then I had this injury in my right foot, and I had 3 stress fractures. And up until that point, I'd never really had too many injuries. I almost felt a bit invincible, like, you know, I can just keep training and get better and better. It's, you know, I'm on an upward trajectory. And actually, at that point, it was just like reality. It was like, you actually can get injured, and this isn't guaranteed. This is real, and it can end like at any time. And it made me just stop and appreciate what I'd achieved so far. And it made me realize how much I really wanted it, how much I wanted to get like right to the top. And yeah, I just had months of having to just step back and take my time and trust in my physios and my team to just support me back into full fitness. And yeah, it was like the toughest time and the biggest challenge that most sportsmen and women face in their careers.
And when you miss the Olympics, you're like, oh, I've got to wait 4 years. I mean, that's, again, an incredible amount of patience that you've had to sort of endure.
Then break it down though, so you have to start focusing on shorter goals. So I then just focused on, okay, I want to get to the indoor season, I want to get to the World Championships that year, I want to get to the Barcelona, to the European Championships, and just, you know, make it a process, a stepping stone to that big goal again.
To have that amount of drive to be world class at something, do you think that is just how you're born, it's inherently part of your makeup and your DNA? Or do you think actually it's perhaps collaborative if you have the right people around you, or there's a bit of fate involved, or is it a mixture? I'm not sure.
Yeah, so I did a psychology degree, so I'm massively interested in like nature, nurture, and what is the most powerful part. And also, I do believe that life is about luck. You know, I'd always say to my coach, you know, I feel really lucky because, you know, I was at an Olympics where it was a home Olympics. I was 26 and like the peak of my career. It was sunny. The weather was great. I felt good. This is all, you know, this is luck. This is luck playing a part. And he'd be like, well, no, but you've also trained really hard and you've done this and you've done that. And I get that. And I think a lot of it comes down to who you are, you know, genetically who I am. And I think I've always been a very determined person, and you know, if I set my mind to something, I want to do it, and I just go until I get there. But equally, if you don't put that into the right environment, then you know, it was never going to translate into a gold medal. So I had those people around me, my coach and my family, and it's always that combination, isn't it?
I think that's very generous of you to say, because I think probably most of it is hard work on your part. But as you say, you had this extraordinary year in 2012, which, I mean, we all loved. We all felt so part of it. And we all probably feel like we know you a bit more than we actually do, because we watched so much of your journey throughout that summer. For us, it just seemed like the best year ever. You know, as you say, the sun was shining and London kind of came to a standstill and all eyes were on the UK, and it just felt completely bizarre and brilliant. Did it feel the same for you, or was there sort of insurmountable amount of pressure that you had to also kind of juggle along with all the excitement as well?
Yeah, I think it was that feeling of, firstly, everyone was like, oh, London's got the Olympics, we're wasting all this money and the traffic's going to be bad and it's going to rain. And yes, everyone,
the traffic was like, not bad.
I know, it was really,
it wasn't even affected as far as I could see. It was fine.
I know. So everyone was really like doom and gloom. But, you know, as an athlete, you're just chipping away, training, trying to block everything out. And then actually when it begun, it was just the most incredible time. And we as a team, we trained in Portugal and we did all our preparations out there. So we were almost in a bit of a bubble, didn't know what was happening as everything started, you know, beginning in the stadium and around the Olympic Park. And then when we flew in to London, it was just like, you know, you just see the swarms of everyone like going into the stadium. I went out for my first event, which was like 9:30 in the morning, and the crowd, like, there was not a seat empty. Everyone was there, their flags, shouting my name. It was just the best 2 days ever.
I feel like I'm getting like goosebumps even imagining, because I remember watching it, and you just, it did just feel like a very beautiful moment for everyone involved, and especially as Team GB did so incredibly. It was just a beautiful thing. How do you deal with that pressure? Because as you say, you've walked out, everyone's got a flag, you're in London, and all eyes are on you, and there's that sort of weird, spooky silence when an event's about to start that always makes me feel like I'm going to vomit and like I'm in the race. And I'm like, no, I'm not in the race. I was actually pregnant at the time. And I felt quite poorly, but I was laying on the sofa and I watched literally any event because it would take my mind off of feeling so nauseous. And there's that weird moment where everything goes quiet and I just always, I'm looking at the athlete thinking, how have they not blacked out? I think I'll just faint. Oh, I'd go, I'm out. I can't do this.
I'm done.
Like, are you aware of that when you're in that moment? Like, what is going through? Is it just sort of a blankness in your mind, or are you, is there a mantra? Are you focusing on something?
Yeah, I think the worst part is actually been out in the warm-up track before, so you're just anticipating what's going to happen. You're anticipating your warm-up and how you're feeling and just thinking, have I actually woke up in a good frame of mind,
yeah,
a good state? There's so many little things that play a massive part in your performance. And I was just remember feeling really nervous in the warm-up track, and then actually when I got out into the stadium, and I know what you mean, that moment where it's all silent, is actually, I felt really calm.
Really?
Like, I felt so calm because I just felt so ready. Like, I'd never been more ready in my life. I had no injuries. I was in like the peak shape of my life. I wasn't ill. I didn't wake up with a cold. I felt absolutely ready to do it. And I was actually just really thankful that I was stood on the line, because I was so worried that I'd pick up an injury or something would go wrong. I was just like, I'm here.
You're grateful to be here.
And I'm ready to go. And yeah, obviously there's like 80,000 people in the stadium, and I kind of went out, and my coach was always say to me, like, through the whole of those 2 days, you've got 80,000 friends and they're all wishing you to do well. And I was like, okay, just as a way to like kind of calm me and make me, yeah, just relax. But actually, you know, as an athlete, to have a crowd like that is just the best. That's what gives you the adrenaline and, yeah, gets you going. I think as soon as, you know, they ask for silence and they, you know, they get you to go on your marks and it's all quiet, I just started thinking about the same things that I think about before every race. I focus on like two technical things. I was just thinking about getting out of the blocks as hard as I can,
yeah,
and just like getting my lead leg down, just smashing every hurdle. And yeah, it kind of just happened, and it was a bit of a blur. And before I knew it, I was at the end of the finish line, and I'd won that race and run the fastest time that I'd ever run in my life. It's just insane. It's so insane.
And when you reach that finish line and you know that you've done exceedingly well, what is that feeling?
But it's just surreal, really. I think you just know that what it's taken to get there. You know how hard it's been, and for everything just to come together in those two moments. You know, it's 2 days in your life where you need everything to just come together and happen. And thankfully it did. So I just felt massive relief, because I did feel a lot of pressure and a lot of expectation from everyone. It was like, you know, everyone thought if I'd come away without a gold medal, it was a massive failure. You know, I had to win. And yeah, it's quite a lot to deal with when you're entering that kind of environment.
I can't imagine. And the thing that is peculiar is, you know, I think we're all in this day and age so aware of this sort of perfectionism that everybody's trying to have in their lives, whether it be a career, the perfect family, the perfect look, the perfect whatever it might be, or to feel perfectly happy like that. And I think we're sort of one of the first generations really dealing with that. And a lot of people really struggle with that. And we're all kind of trying to find a middle ground of, you know, being content, but also accepting things in life. But in your career, it has to be perfect. There is no room for anything other than perfect if you want to be on the podium and you want to get a gold medal. Yeah. So how do you deal with that in your everyday life? Knowing there is a part of your life, and at that time, a huge part of your life, that had to be absolutely perfect.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because there's such small margins for error, and you're right, every event has to be spot on. You can't make the slightest mistake, because if you do, then, you know, your score and your heptathlon has fallen apart, and all those months of training is gone in just literally like an instant. So yeah, as an athlete, you strive for massive perfection, because if you don't, then you're ultimately not going to win.
I don't know how you do it. I just don't understand. I think, you know, in my career, I like things to go well, but if I cock up a bit, it doesn't really matter so much. I think people can, they see you as human and go, oh, right, you've made a mistake. But Olympians, you're almost not human. You're like, you're an Olympian. You know, yeah. You're the perfect human who does perfect things. And it's just that pressure is...
It is, but it's a relatively short amount of time, you know, within your life. So I retired at 30. Yeah. So I think if you put it into perspective that you're in this incredible position where you can, you know, you have the opportunity to have sport as your career and as your life, really, you take it with both hands, because it's relatively short-lived. It's a short career, and then you have the rest of your life to, which is actually quite scary, to turn and do something completely new and something completely different, where you don't have to be perfect, but you have to adjust and adapt to a new way of life.
So, well, that's where you're at now. So at what point did you sort of start contemplating retirement? When did that first pop into your head?
So I don't think you ever know when you're going to retire as a sports person, but after I had my son Reggie, I knew I wanted to come back into full-time athletics, and I wanted to get back to one last Olympics. So in my head, I was thinking 2 more years, if I can do this, it would be incredible. Reggie would be a part of this massive like dream of mine, and then I could retire. So in those last 2 years, I was motivated by Reggie and wanting him to be part of that, and then also by the fact that this is short term, it's 2 years, and then I will retire and I can put all my energy into Reggie and, you know, future kids.
Oh, I love that you do. I just think it's amazing, and pregnancy is such a humbling experience in so many ways, and physically you were used to that sort of level of training and that perfection and where you could push your body to, and then all of a sudden when you're pregnant you are completely out of control. So how did you sort of navigate that one?
I mean, it is just the unknown, isn't it? It's crazy. And, you know, even though in my mind I was thinking, yeah, you know, my tummy will get bigger, I'll have the baby, I'll just get back into training, I'll put the baby at the side, it'll be fine. Oh my gosh, you have no idea of how much your body changes physically, but also mentally. Just, you're just a different person. And yeah, I had to obviously adapt my training. So it was all about training within a comfort zone, which I actually really enjoyed. It was nice to exercise at a lower level and just enjoy exercising just to keep fit. And then I had amazing people around me to support me back after I had Reggie. But it was the toughest time of my life because I just wanted to spend all my time with my little baby and do everything right for him. But then I wanted him to see mummy working and going for medals. Yeah, it's the hardest thing.
It is. And I love that you're being very honest about that because I feel exactly the same. I always feel absolutely, sort of drowning in guilt when I go to work and all the sorts of things that I think most working mums feel. Mm. And it's a hard one to get around. But I love that part of your dream was to sort of show your new son what you were capable of and what he could therefore be capable of. And I think that's an important thing to sort of remember for yourself, but also for your family as well. But it's tough. It's a tough one.
It is. And I'm so thankful that I can look back at that time in my life and know that I have no regrets. I went for it and I did it. And Reggie was a part of that whole thing. You know, he got to see mummy winning a world medal and an Olympic silver. And it just makes it all worthwhile because at the time I just felt so, like, what am I doing? Why am I even training? Like, I've won an Olympic gold medal. What am I doing? Why am I even doing this to myself for 2 more years? And then I was like, well, I'm doing this because I don't want to look back in 5 years' time and be like, you had the most incredible opportunity, unique opportunity that not many people get, and you didn't give it everything. Yeah, I mean, Reggie doesn't fully understand it, but hopefully...
He can look at the pictures one day.
Yeah, exactly.
You can tell him all the stories. I think that's such a beautiful, special thing for you guys as a family to have done.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
And so after you'd given birth, how was that sort of first moment back when you knew you were changing from... Because, there is that bit where you've just had the baby and you are so like... Oh my God, you're exhausted, but also you're quite sort of comfortable in the fact that you can let it all hang out and you're just sort of eating whatever and going with it. But then you've got to switch it up, in your career and go, right, now I'm back to getting my body ready for world-class athletics. I remember going for my first run and literally just peeing everywhere and thinking, wait a minute, I didn't used to do that. What's happening there? And, I'm just going for a light 3K jog. Like, how did you sort of start that journey back to getting your body where it was before?
So before I'd even given birth, I hadn't really thought about all the, the issues and things that you might face after pregnancy. People don't really tell you all the details and the things that are going to change and the things that might happen. And so I was kind of like, in a way, like blissfully unaware. And because I had my physio with me, she was just incredible. And she put together all these exercises to do to help me strengthen all these core muscles and get my pelvic floor working again and build up back into training really slowly. Because otherwise, I would have just absolutely been like, oh, like, what's happened to my body? I want to get it back. I'm going to go and run. I'm going to go and, start doing some dynamic things. And it's just... I feel really thankful that I had her to educate me and help me back, because your body has literally changed so much. And, it takes like a year for your body to fully like settle back to normal.
And was that a sort of a huge amount of motivation for you to start this app that you've now got going? So I was looking through what you want to achieve with it and the sort of ideas behind it. And I love the postnatal element and also the pregnancy exercise that you've got running through it. Can you talk us through the ideas behind it and what you want people to sort of get from it?
Yeah, so it was all kind of inspired by my own pregnancies. And obviously with Reggie, I did have all that support. I knew what to do. With Liv, I was retired and I was like, okay, I've got to do all this myself now. I've not got anyone telling me what to do. So obviously I reverted back to all the exercises that I did with Reggie that I trusted and that worked really well. And I've got so many friends that are kind of like, oh, I didn't do this and I didn't do that, and should I have done this? I didn't know what exercises to do after I had my baby. And I just sat down with my physio and I was like, it'd be amazing to put it all into one space where we can just create a really easy process for pregnant ladies, new mums, to just follow the simple exercises and the right exercises to do at the right time. And, you know, hopefully not have all these problems where, you know, you're wetting yourself or you're having backaches and, you know, all these issues that you come out of pregnancy with can be solved with, you know, the right exercises. So, yeah, it's been like a long process of putting it all together. But, yeah, I'm excited and hope that as many women take comfort and support in it.
I think they will, because I think it is a confusing time. I mean, I barely exercised during either of my pregnancies just because I was so unsure and I didn't want to like damage the baby. And I think you do feel extra paranoid about everything. So I used to do like a little bit of swimming and go walking, really. But like you say, after that postnatal bit, again, it's really confusing. And I still have like issues with my hips now from giving birth, and they still don't feel like they're quite back in the right place. And I think actually having someone that really knows what they're talking about and to advise you is, first of all, really rare. But if you have it, massively valuable, because don't all women deserve to then just feel normal again afterwards?
Yeah, exactly. It shouldn't be dictated by, have you got access to a physio? Have you got the money to pay for it? Have you got the time to do it? Most of the exercises are so simple to do and they take like hardly any time. But I think the most important thing that I learned was that it's the doing the right ones in the right order. Yes. And not rushing yourself through the process of doing them. And if you do get them right, you know, you can go on and win an Olympic medal.
But no, for the hard sell, guys, the hard sell.
No, it's you know, you knit all those muscles back together and do these exercises because you're proofing your body for just life, you know.
And then outside of the pregnancy and postnatal workouts, you've got regular 20-minute workouts for, you know, because none of us have any time these days for some reason and we want to get it done quick. So how have you sort of devised those exercise plans?
So they're just workouts that I literally do like on a weekly basis. And when I retired, I was like, I'm not doing circuits anymore. I'm not doing hill runs. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing any of that hard work. And actually, those are all the sessions that make the biggest difference in a short amount of time. So I kind of just like picked lots of different random circuits that I enjoyed doing while I was training and mixed them around into shorter workouts. So they're like 20 minutes, 30 minutes is the longest. And they just get you fit. They get you working hard, but you also feel like you've not been doing it for like an hour. You can just like slot it in. Yeah, exactly. Just slot it in at the end of the day or, you know, when the kids are having a nap, if they still nap, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh, I wish they still napped.
Yeah, you're well out of that.
I'm out of that. And how did you feel when you were sort of contemplating retirement? Because I watched the Usain Bolt documentary, which I absolutely loved. And I remember him sort of having this, like, such a strong desire to just ditch all of this insane training that you guys have to do and go out and be with his friends and go to Rio Carnival and party and just like let loose. Did you sort of have that same desire, or were you a little bit nervous about losing that very rigid structure that was such a huge part of your life?
No, I was, you absolutely feel like that. You've lived such a structured life, and I love structure. I'm, you know, a massive believer in having routine, and I like that. So I bring that to my life now, but everything has been so structured. Training is very repetitive and you have to work incredibly hard constantly. So when you retire, you literally just want to be like a normal person. You want to, you know, have the flexibility to go out and drink if you want to, or, you know, go to a last minute event that you can't normally go to because you have to say no to everything. So yeah, it's just a nice feeling to just to have that like sense of freedom.
You still feel that now? You still feel that sort of liberation? A bit like when you finish your GCSEs and go, woohoo, yeah. Not going back there again.
Yeah. It's exactly like that, yeah. I do, I mean, obviously I've got two kids, so I have to have like routine and structure. It's not as wild like Rio partying like Usain is. but yeah, no, it's nice. It's just nice to have that. It doesn't have to fit around my training all the time. It's kind of like we do what we want now as a family, which is great.
How do you sort of deal with not having those huge highs? Because especially after 2012, I mean, I can't imagine, you've just been flying for months afterwards. How do you sort of come down from that? And then how do you now today deal with the fact that you know, those huge highs probably won't be reached again in that way.
Yeah, I think it's accepting it, isn't it? Because yeah. No, those moments, you know, when I crossed the line after London and, you know, the world championship medals that I've won in the past, it is like no other feeling, and it's very hard to replicate that. I still feel that nervous energy and that adrenaline when I watch other athletes compete now. So I get to sit on the sidelines and talk about everyone competing. I still feel that like buzz of, I know how it feels when you've done that well. But, you know, I've had a fantastic career and I've achieved more than I ever thought I would achieve. So, yeah, if I'm feeling like I need a pick-me-up, I'll just, put on some, like, YouTube videos of 2012.
Oh, that's me crossing the line again.
Make the kids watch it. Be like, look at mummy, look what she did.
Oh, my God, too right. I think if I were you, I would have, like, just a TV with that on a roll the whole time, like a picture frame, just me crossing the line.
Man,
I mean, what a moment. How did you sort of, you know, as a group, because I'm imagining you forged some incredible friendships with your teammates during that time, you know, how did you all deal with coming down from that high? Because they were the only people that understood what you were going through. I'm sure that everybody around me, you was completely elated, but they can never really understand that feeling and what you're going through. Did you kind of, you know, gravitate towards your other teammates to kind of get through that bizarre situation?
I think it's so individual. So like myself and Mo and Greg, obviously we all won on that incredible night, and we all had completely different experiences of winning and went off into our separate lives in a weird way. We all trained in different areas and prepared in different ways, and athletics is essentially it's individual, it's just you. So we kind of all went our different ways and carried on life in a different kind of like on a different level. So, you know, I mean, Mo's still competing and Greg's like recently retired, and we all had a different journey out of 2012, but equally like a massive connection and appreciation for how incredible that night was.
Oh, it was just but I can still remember like the feeling. It just, everything felt a bit like it was Christmas in London. It was just gorgeous. Now that you have retired and that you're putting so much of your energy into this app, and I know that you've got other initiatives that are going on at the moment, do you still feel that need for perfection in these new areas of your career and life now?
I think it goes back to nature again, and I am that kind of person that if I do something, I want to do it properly. And, you know, with the app, it's something that I've thought about for a while and it's really close to my heart. You know, I'm a mum, and I think when you're in that mum world, you're so passionate about other mums and their experiences as well. It's not about being perfect with everything now, because real life isn't like that. Sport is, but real life isn't. And it's accepting that, you know, you just work hard and give it everything you can. And, you know, if you do that, you've got to come away happy.
I think certainly having young kids just highlights that, doesn't it? That, you know, you can have the best laid plans, and with two young kids in tow, it was probably not going to happen. And you just got to accept it. And
I know, you just got to appreciate it. Getting through those random days. I think with having young kids, every day is so different, and it's a randomness and it's amazing. But that's, you know, that's life, and all those little things are the best things in life.
So how old are your kids now? Reggie's?
So Reggie's going to be 5 next month. Oh. And then Liv's coming up to 21 months.
Oh my God, wow.
Yeah, so it's amazing. Kind of busy with two.
It's just bonkers, isn't it? I'm very fascinated in this sort of moment of extreme pressure that you've been under. And whenever I'm under like minuscule amounts of pressure, I know certain things will trigger me in a negative way. So if I've got a nerve-wracking job, or I have to get up at a different time or whatever, I get really thrown by things. So say you've got an Olympic event or a world championship the next day, can you sleep? Is that possible?
It's so hard. Mm. It is so hard, because you just want to know. I just remember laying in bed before those competitions just thinking, what's going to happen? I just want to know what's going to happen. It's that unknown. And you kind of, in your mind, you're thinking, right, I need to go to sleep because I need rest, because I need to be fresh and like on my best form ever. But then at the same time, you just can't. It's really hard to switch your mind off and, you know, just stop yourself from thinking about all those different outcomes and putting the negativity out of your head. I think one thing I always used to do before every heptathlon, the night before, before I'd go to sleep, I'd think about every event and go through the most perfect performance. Nothing negative, just the perfect performance with every event. And then I'd finish, picture myself crossing the line, and then try and go to sleep. So I'd leave that really positive thought in my mind before the next day. And yeah, that kind of helped put all that negativity out of my head and just ease me.
I love that. Jessica, that is my massive takeaway from this chat, is I'm going to do that, because that's why I usually don't sleep, because I'm thinking, oh, what if this happens? Or what if I forget how to do the news on when I'm doing the radio and I don't fade the microphone? I always think of the worst possible things.
Yeah.
But actually, to have that discipline to imagine and manifest, because you're manifesting it, aren't you?
Yeah.
Of picturing the ideal outcome. What a brilliant way to end one day and to shut off to then start another. We can all do that, even if we're not doing the Olympics the next day. Yeah, just do it for our everyday lives.
Yeah, because negative thought is so... it just creeps into your mind and it just consumes everything. And particularly, you know, when I was performing, if I'd stand on the start line and think about, oh gosh, I don't want to fall over the hurdle, I don't want to fall over the hurdle, 9 times out of 10, I probably would fall over the hurdle, because it's, your mind is such a powerful thing and it affects you physically. It's putting all that negativity out of your mind, which is often hard, and, you know, putting all that positivity back in.
But you've tested it and it works. Like that,
it definitely works.
You know, you're not lying. You're someone, we've all seen that you've done it and it works. Mm-hmm. And I think so many of us need to do this. And I'm talking about myself massively here, but there's lots of people out there who'll be listening to this thinking, oh my God, I need to do that. Because I think we go into many nerve-wracking situations, and it could be something that doesn't even seem that nerve-wracking. I get nervous about weird, silly things, but then I'm quite calm in slightly more scary situations.
Yeah, yeah.
And it will be the same for everyone. It'll be different. But I think we do sometimes enter those scenarios with a very negative, imagined outcome. We've almost we've lived it all in a very sort of negative way before we've got there. And then you're setting yourself up for a fall straight away.
Exactly. I just think the...
why do we do that?
It's
annoying.
The appreciation for how powerful like our thoughts are,
yeah,
and how they impact on the way we actually go about and perform. And that can be taken, like you say, into every part of your life, whatever you do.
I do think that. Sometimes I think in my head, don't be cocky, like imagining it all going well, because then if it goes wrong, you'll be disappointed. But actually, that's such a load of shit, and we should just have that beautiful clarity of this is going to be this.
It doesn't have to be, like you say, it doesn't have to be cocky though. Like, I'm very much, when I'm performing and I'm out there competing, I don't think about the end product. I don't think about standing on the podium. Yeah. But it's, you know, to imagine your perfect day, your perfect speech, your perfect performance, then that can only be a great thing to do and can only help you.
Oh, I like that. That a lot. So once you've had that little imagined scenario in your head, could you then switch off and sleep? Because if I have insomnia and then I've got a big show or something the next day, I feel horrific. Mm. Like, I know I'm not going to be in my A game. I'm not going to, you know, think as quickly on my feet. I won't be able to string a sentence together, which is not ideal in my career. And I just feel defeated before I start. So sleep feels like such a big one to me. And especially now I've got kids. Oh my God, what if they wake me up in the night? Or, you know, what if I can't get back to sleep once they've woken me up? And I think that sleep thing is so important if you've got a level of performance, physical or not, I don't think it matters, but a performance of sorts the next day that you need to be on your game for.
Yeah, and it plays on your mind. If you can't, if you just can't get to sleep, you just start thinking about how it's going to impact on the next day. And I think you're right. If I just think about that perfect process, that perfect performance, I feel like it's almost like a routine. And once I've done that, and it is quite hard sometimes, because when you're imagining, for example, if I'm thinking about the hurdles, I close my eyes and I start thinking about the perfect race, then I'll end up like falling over a couple of times. I'm like, no, I have to recorrect myself. And then once I've gone through that routine, it's almost like I can switch off then. I feel like I've done it, and then I can just fall asleep quite easily. In between the 2 days is hard though, because you've obviously competed and your adrenaline's pumping, and it's either going well or it's not, and then you've got to again try and get to sleep with all that excitement and that adrenaline.
Adrenaline has been such a huge part of your career, because you know you physically need it to perform and do what you do. Have you got tried and tested techniques or physical things that you can do to help bring those those adrenaline levels down and sort of calm yourself physically again?
With me, it's been understanding adrenaline. So when I line up for a competition, and whether it's the 200 metres, I get really, really nervous for the 200 metres, and I'd have so much adrenaline. And it was kind of understanding that when I feel like that and the adrenaline's really high and my legs are like complete jelly, you know, when you feel like I can't even move, like how am I going to be able to run and function in a dynamic way when my legs are like shaking like jelly? I had to almost like retrain my thoughts and tell myself that when I feel like that, that means I am absolutely ready to go. And as soon as that gun goes, I'm just gone. Like that jelly feeling is a good feeling. So it's almost like tricking your mind to say that
mind games.
Nerves are good, and you have to use that adrenaline and that nervous energy to, you know, to put it into your performance and help you.
And how do you block out the other people around you? Because you've got the other people you're competing against are right there. And I think we can use this as a metaphor in all of our lives, that we've got people in our lives that we probably pay too much attention to, and what they're achieving, what they're capable of, what we assume about them as they're stood there on that start line. How do you, you know, negate that and just stay in your zone, ready for your race?
It is hard, and it comes with experience and practice, because it's so easy, like you're saying, just general life, to be so distracted by what they're doing over there, look at their life, and it's, you know, particularly with social media, oh, everything's perfect and great. And actually, it's put it into perspective for yourself, and particularly in an athletics context, you would always have to stand there and know that whatever I did, I couldn't control or dictate anyone beside me what they were about to do. I couldn't control whether they were going to run a PB or not, or whether they were going to win or not. And you know, my coach would just say, literally, don't even look at anyone. And if you're too busy worrying about what they're doing, then that's going to translate into a bad performance for you.
And can you apply that to your everyday life? Like, you know, having someone coach you in that way for your career, can you actually, or do you naturally think, well, I don't really care what that person's doing, I'm not going to worry about it? Or is it much harder in your sort of everyday life to deal with that?
I think it is harder in your everyday life, because there are so many distractions and so many things going on all the time. But I do feel that I still take that same like mantra and the way I was within an athletics world into my normal life. And yeah, I just don't try not to get too wrapped up in everything else and what other people are doing, because it's just a crazy world and it can be all consuming, and it's just remembering that perspective and what's important in life.
It's hard, isn't it? Because we all think we know everything about everyone these days, and it can really fog a lot of thought and what you believe. And actually, it's such a lesson to learn to just do what feels right to you and not worry about everyone else.
Yeah, and the one thing that does worry me is how my children will see it. How life will be when they're 13, 14, 15, and how they perceive social media, life, and what everyone else is doing, and how that affects them. And it's about making sure that they understand like reality and what's real and what's not.
I know, isn't it scary? Like, we've got little kids, really, but you know, what is it going to be like when they're teenagers? I can't actually think about it. It freaks me out too much.
It scares me so much. I can't think.
It's just, it's mad. But, you know, we'll be there with them throughout the process and communicate and all the things that we know we've got to do. So at this point now in your life where you don't have to push your body to those extremes and compete physically like that, what does exercise mean to you in an everyday sense?
Before it almost became a bit of a chore, you know, where you feel you have to train, I have to do this because I'm working towards a championships. Whereas now it's like, oh, I've got 20 minutes to go and just enjoy a bit of exercise, to actually not think about anything, to not be on my phone, to not be stressing. I can just like completely clear my head, and just that buzz that you have when you've exercised, you know, I often feel like, oh, I'm tired, I don't know if I've got the energy to do it, you know, once the kids are in bed. But as soon as I've started and, you know, got into the full like workout, I just feel incredible after. I just have such an energy like release and buzz, and yeah, I love that feeling.
So do you say your sort of relationship with exercise has changed? Because as you say, like before it was all for a purpose and an end goal, but now it's much more about this makes me feel good and this is good for my head.
Yeah, because when I was training full-time, I didn't really, my mind was still going. I was like, well, am I running fast enough? Have I hit my targets? Am I hurdling in the right way? It was constantly still ticking over, whereas now I set up my mat in the living room and I do my circuits. I don't have to think about anything. I just think about training hard and just that buzz of exercising now, which I absolutely love.
That's so lovely. That's so wonderful. Jessica, thank you. Dame Jessica. Whenever I can, I'll throw that in there. Thank you so much. What a wonderful opportunity to, you know, having been someone that just loved watching the Olympics so much, that 2012 London Olympics, to sit and sort of ask you all the questions that I've been pondering since then is a real treat. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Jessica. You can download her app called Jenice on the App Store or on Google Play. Do it now. You can catch up with all our Olympic gold-winning guests from Tom Daley, Dame Kelly Holmes to Victoria Pendleton when you subscribe. Just head to Apple Podcasts, Spotify or Google Podcasts and hit subscribe. And to find out who's on the show next week, find us on Instagram at Happy Place Official. Thanks again to Jessica, to the producer Matt Hill at Rethink Audio, and to you for listening. We'll see you next week.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.